Well, I thought Jim was just seeing if I was awake this morning. And he did awaken me. Earl thought he might be preaching this morning. It's a joy to see you and to be home again. I was last week with the church in Plant City, Florida, which has existed for 100 years. And there are elders there whose fathers were elders before them. And the steadfastness of the leadership through the years that's existed has truly made evident the strength and power of godly men and women and the teaching of the Word of God through the generations. A lot of wonderful young people there. Brother Gary Ogden is preaching. He's been there 20 years, so it's tradition, I think, men to hang on for a long time. But the work is doing really well, and I was delighted to be there with him and grateful for your fellowship in the gospel that allowed it to be possible. I picked up this poem that is old and speaks about the tenacity of mother love. If I were hanged on the highest hill, mother of mine, oh mother of mine, I know whose love would follow me still. Mother of mine, oh mother of mine. If I were drowned in the deepest sea, mother of mine, oh mother of mine, I know whose tears would come down. Mother of mine, mother of mine. If I were damned of body and soul, I know whose prayers would make me whole. Mother of mine, oh mother of mine. Well, we celebrate the unusual quality of the love of a mother frequently. And, of course, this is a day in the nation's annual calendar when mothers are remembered. And I think that's fine. I think that's good. And we're glad for all the visitors we have here today because of that. We want to welcome you most warmly. And God recognizes the significance of mothers along with fathers. And he has just completed in the Ten Commandments, as he speaks from Sinai Summit, the commands that had to do with men in their relationship to him. And the first command after he has completed those is that we are to honor our fathers and our mothers. And that this commandment, as the New Testament says, is the first one with promise, that our days may be long upon the earth. Wisdom has it. That's certainly the theme throughout Proverbs, that if we do not listen to our mothers and fathers, there will be tragedy as a result. They are the ones who come before us. They are the ones who first gave us life by the power of God, and they are the ones who nurture us in early days. And so for that reason, it is absolutely appropriate that we should remember to honor them, not simply by words and not certainly just one day in a year, but always thinking. And this means a great deal more to me, I guess, because my own mother reaches the final years of her life. And so I must reflect on what I owe to her. But it's not my intention this morning to just speak about how we ought to honor mothers. But if I can, to induce in us a greater and higher understanding of the significance of the role of women in motherhood. I'm doing this simply because I believe that it has been considerably diminished in recent years in our society. We do all we can in preaching the gospel to get men to realize that they must not try to make their work their life. That we're a good bit more than a job. And though it is our task to bear the financial responsibilities of the home, I believe we can see that from Eden's garden when it was Adam who was given the task of working there. But that's not life. And just as we're struggling to get men to recognize they must not tie themselves up in such a narrow kind of identity, we have women who are now encouraged to pursue it with great zeal. What a tragedy. To be a mother is a high calling, indeed. And I think we recognize that God intended that that be the case, and I recognize as I say it that his statements in Genesis 1 verse 28, that he blessed them and told them to multiply and replenish the earth, is not just to the woman, but to the man. It is just as great a tragedy, I think, for a man to desire no children, have no wish for the burden of that, as it is for a woman. But we think of women when we think of children because they are the child bearers. Children are formed beneath the heart of women. In their womb, the child takes shape. And long before the child is born, sentiments begin to arise when all things are as they ought to be in the heart of the expectant mother of what that child will be and the happiness the child will bring. I know there are exceptions to the rule, and that does not mean that someone is less than she ought to be because she bears no children. Some cannot. And there are other circumstances that cause a woman not to marry, and therefore she does not bear children. But I think that fundamentally and basically we understand that it was God's intention that we should be parents and that children should be born to us, and certainly that should be the aspiration of a woman, not a career. I remember some years ago, a very earnest mother asked me the question, how do we train our daughters so that they can have some means of livelihood if it is necessary? They may not marry. Or if they do marry, their husband may become incapacitated or may die. How do we train them so they have a means of sustaining themselves in the years before they marry, and if tragedy strikes, even afterward, and still not cause them to become career women? And I thought that's a perceptive question. But that really is where it is. Godly parents want to rear their daughters to think of motherhood as a wonderful and holy calling, even while they are giving them training in something that will allow them to live physically. But we ought to do the same with our sons. As much as we should instill in them a sense of responsibility, and as much as we should instill in them a sense of obligation to bear the burdens of the family and caring for them, we must not ever leave them with the impression that somehow or another a job is a higher calling than fatherhood. Because it certainly is not. Jobs work with things. Oh yes, people are involved, I know that. And there is often service involved, and I think that adds to the distinction of the job. But parenthood deals with the living soul of a human being. And it's not just here that the consequence of that activity has its appearance, but in eternity. So to be a mother is a very high calling. It has to do with God, but I would stress for you that biology alone can't make a mother. People think so, but it's not. It's not at all true. I think people think that biology alone can make marriage, and it won't do it. Will not do it. Incapable of doing it. Nothing happens automatically here. Motherhood, like being a husband or a wife and entering into a marriage, is a product of character. And character is a product of choices, and choices are a product of values. And the values that we choose are critical. Here's the story of our world. A 5-year-old boy, after a morning session of preschool, finds his way home to an empty apartment, fixes lunch of cookies and potato chips, and turns on the TV to watch an afternoon of soap operas. A young, well-dressed couple stands beside the body, barely conscious of their 4-year-old son, in an emergency room. The parents tell the doctor that he fell into the fireplace, but actually they wrapped newspapers around his arms and set him on fire. A bouncy 11-year-old girl with her arms full of books, anticipating a day at school, pauses by her parents' bedroom to hear her mother say, "I am not staying here any longer. I'm tired of my life being controlled by you and the kids. You can have them for all I'm concerned, or you can send them to your mother and she can take care or get somebody else, but I'm not going to stay." Well, those things happen. And they tell us that biology alone cannot make a mother. Paul said in Romans 1:31 that the world of the ancient Greeks and Romans was without natural affection. But there's a more awful statement in 2 Timothy 3, verse 3, where the same words are used, and it's talking about people who are supposed to be Christians. People who are supposed to understand something of the transcendent values of God. Not a pagan world that had lived in endless darkness, virtually endless. And so as Christians, we above all people should grasp and understand the importance of this role, and should seek it out and support it. To young men, I say, if you propose to marry, as I hope you will, and that God blesses you with such a union, then do your best to make it possible for the wife you choose to be the mother she ought to be. Instead of joining you in some pursuit of things that you will give up soon enough, because none of us are going to be here very long. And to the young ladies, whereas you may take upon yourself a training and education, good and honorable occupations, do not begin to identify yourself and your person with that. But look at the higher call, to be a wife and to be a mother, which touches, as we have noted, the eternal things. Well, the problem is that we may not abuse our children or fail to feed them and clothe them. But unfortunately, self-centeredness and lack of commitment and preoccupation with other interests can take an awful toll on children. And that's why it's so important we recognize the high calling that motherhood is. There is no place like home for children. But we don't seem to have gotten that point today. It touches me when I read the 10th chapter of John and Jesus speaks about the good shepherd. And often I have made application of that to elders in local churches, but I think I can well make application of that to parents and to mothers. The good shepherd does what? According to John 10, 11 to 13, he lays down his life for the sheep. But what about the hireling? the one who's doing a job, whose sheep these are not. Jesus said, the hireling will run when danger comes, when burdens come, when difficulty comes. I want to ask you this question. Do you want your children to be reared by hirelings? I don't mean to demean those who offer child care services. I'm sure many of them are conscientious, but it's a job. And you are the mother. And the children are yours. It's no secret at all how significant the early years of a child are to the adult being that is being produced. The Children's Defense Fund organization, which is involved in out-of-home care for children, has this statement to make. Almost everyone agrees that families are vital to the healthy development of children. Professionals and researchers confirm the conventional wisdom. Children need to feel wanted and accepted. They need continuity in their relationships with biological or psychological parents. They need guidance to cope with the demands of growing up. And they need to have some sense that there is a regular, dependable quality in the world. And that ought to come, if all things are equal, from their parents and from the mother. In the early days, I think there's no question that children are most impacted by the mother because they feed at the mother's breast. They are nestled there. They are nourished there. They're fed by her day in and day out. And it ought to be so. Is that the reason that these big old football players always, when the television camera hits them, say, hi, Mom? Is that the reason? They don't say hi, Dad. It's always been interesting. Hi, Mom. You can read their lips. They can't forget that. Not in their adult life, massive as they've grown to be, that it was their mother that nurtured them in those early days. And it is a critical time. I've read through the years, first 2 years are exceedingly critical. And now I've been reading that the first 5 years are critical to the formation of the child's character. There's a bonding that takes place in those early days that, if it is not done, can have some awful results. I've dealt with parents of adopted children who were adopted when they were 2-3 years of age and who were abused when they were in those early years. And I can tell you that the mark of that is heavy upon those children and sometimes is not even overcome by love and attention and care of later years. So what I'm saying to you, Are you willing to turn over these children in their most formative period to those who are hired to the task? And I don't think I want to entertain this notion of quality time. I think all time in a family ought to be quality. You ought not to waste it because it's a narrow slit, my friend, and it'll be over soon enough. But it takes time to do this, and a serious investment, and it takes sacrifice. This is a high call. This is not an avocation. This is not a hobby. Motherhood is not a hobby. It is a calling of great challenge. I appreciate the words of Jean Fleming in a book she wrote last decade on a mother's heart. And she mentions the case of a woman who lived and worked in Korea. And her interests were spiritual. And she had engraved on her tombstone, if I had 1,000 lives to give, Korea should have them all. Well, what I want you to think about today, if I had 1,000 years to live, my children would have them all. To be a Christian is to be a servant. Oh, we have a hard time getting that across. We like to be important and we like to be significant, but we think of importance and significance only in terms of running the show. When the truth is, as Jesus has tried to tell us again and again, the greatest in the kingdom of heaven is the servant of all, and motherhood is a service of self-sacrifice, of self-emptying love. You give yourself for the sake of others, but it ought not to be strange to a Christian. Because that's what Jesus did. And that's what he called on us to do. And I go back again and again to that passage in Ephesians chapter 5, verse 21 and following that talks about wives and husbands and children and parents and servants and masters. And what Paul is saying there is all are servants to the other. It doesn't make any difference who happens to be the leading one in the relationship. As a mother, you'll be a leading person in the home. You'll guide. But you'll guide as a servant. And if you don't guide as a servant, you're not going to do it very well. Because they're going to need you in those days. And they may not always be easy times. Do you sometimes think, and I'd like to address, if I might, this morning, the young mothers especially. I appreciate young mothers. I think of them often as they struggle with these little babies and small children and wonder why they came anyway to these assemblies, and they can't tell you what the sermon's all about, and they can't remember half that went on because they've had to be attentive to these children, and they're trying to get them to sit still and be quiet and listen, but that's an education, isn't it? That takes time. And I feel for them, and I don't want them to feel ever that they're a burden for the rest of us. We want them here, and we want those children here. But Gene Theming said, "Do you sometimes feel like life is passing you by while you shampoo the peanut butter out of Junior's hair, then lug the diaper pail into the laundry room once more? Does your mothering seem uninteresting, insignificant, even slightly demeaning? Do you feel you are lying dormant, your talents, gifts, and degrees wasted on your present occupation? Do you feel as though you are holding pattern, waiting for your children to leave home or start to school so you can resume real life? That would be a serious mistake, wouldn't it?" This is not time out from real life. This is real life. This will be the greatest contribution perhaps you will make to the lives of other people. In your children. Not just to them, but to those that the children will influence and bless. Or God forbid, curse. So if the task of being a mother should not be looked on as something less than real achievement. I know you can get the feeling like you couldn't hold a conversation above age 4. I know that. I understand the difficulty of spending all this time with little children. But that doesn't mean that somehow you become an intellectual back number. Let me think with you about some of the things that you're called upon to do and to be as a consequence of being a mother. You have become a teacher. You have become a nurse. You have become a counselor. You have become a friend. You have become a coach. You have become a disciplinarian. Who knows what you may be. As one mother said as she delivered the papers one morning and was met by her friend at the door, she said, "Well, my son's off enjoying himself somewhere and has some award that he won. So his brother and I are delivering the papers." And I didn't think when I became a mother that I'd be delivering papers. But you can be found doing a lot of things when you become a mother because that's a part of it. But listen, that's not demeaning. That is not demeaning. And I just want that point to be made. And then I want to make the final point, though it might be a little longer than just a minute or two. And that's the importance of having a vision of the greatness of what you're doing when you're a mother. The greatness of what you're doing. Don't ever sell it short. I think the only reason we could do that is because we have become so materialistic and this worldly in our thinking. And we are concerned about what we are going to achieve here. That in the light of people who watch us and observe us, they're going to think that we did rather well. But what I'm pleading for this morning is that we do what we do as mothers looking to God and considering eternity. And realizing that we are really somebody. I'm not trying to enlarge your ego until it bursts right out of your chest. I'm not trying to do that, but I am trying to say to you that you're losing nothing. Life is not passing you by. I'll tell you where life will pass you by. Sitting on some job somewhere. Attaining some this worldly success somewhere. That's when life will have passed you by and when things that are really important happening right under your nose and you missed it. That'd be the tragedy. The importance of a mother's vision. What should the mother's vision be? Well, the vision of the mother ought to be the vision of God because that's what life's about. And what the sixth chapter of Deuteronomy says, verses 4 and 5, 6, we know that passage that gives us the first and greatest commandment, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And then he goes on to say, that's exactly what you teach your children to do, to love God. Now, there's a task worthy of a lifetime. To train children to love God. And that involves so much, doesn't it? It means that the child gives up himself to the greater. It means the child loves a God who teaches him to love others and to sacrifice himself for those. It means you teach a child to love God who has high values that are lofty and make the child the kind of person that will be a blessing to others. And so you need to live the dream before you have it for your children. The most important thing you can do as a mother is love God with all your heart and let it be evident. In fact, it will be evident. You need not parade it. You won't have to push it. If you love God with all your heart, the children can't miss it. I didn't miss it. I knew how my mother felt. I didn't always feel that way. But I knew how she felt. But how she felt became a powerful force in the lives of her sons. More powerful than we knew. I've already told you that an aunt of mine said later in our lives that she thought we'd all wind up in reform school. And I suspect it could easily have happened had my mother not loved us more tenaciously as she did. But the point here is, we must live it in order to teach it. And that means our values must be evident every day to our children. As we talk to them by the bedside, and as we work in the kitchen, and as we go to the grocery store, and as we go to the meeting house, and as we do this and we do that, there's a constant education going on, both by example and by word, and the dream must be high. Illustrations of that visionary view of motherhood. Hannah, the mother of Samuel, didn't have a child, longed for a child, ached for a child, pled for a child, told God if he would give her a man-child that she would give him back to his service. Well, we say, that's wonderful. No, that's the way it must be every time. Children are given to us as a stewardship, I think. They're on lease. I don't know how. That's maybe a little too mundane an expression, but they're not ours. And Hannah, I think, recognized that. And then there's Jochebed, second chapter of Exodus, where nobody's name is mentioned except Moses. And there are several characters there. There's the mother and the father, and there's the sister. And there's the princess, and yet not a name mentioned except the name of Moses, who was the object of all this during the time when it was death for a male child under the Pharaoh. And likely it was death to anybody that interfered with his project to reduce the male population of the Israelites. And when Amram and Jochebed had that little boy and saw that he was a goodly child and hid him for 3 months, and then set him afloat on that strange little basket on the bosom of the Nile. Hebrews 11 says that was done by faith. In the 7th chapter of Acts, in Stephen's address to the Sanhedrin, the suggestion is made, and you'll look at it in the footnote, at least in the American Standard Version, that he was seen as goodly by God, goodly in the sight of God. And that may suggest that God revealed to the parents what this child would mean. I'm not sure about that. But at any rate, she, in faith, took the child and essentially gave up the child, just like Hannah did. And then God, by his providence, brought the princess down at the right time and caused her to look in the right direction at the right time and caused her to be the right kind of individual, had compassion on the little baby weeping in the little ark that had been made. And she took him. And then, of course, his sister said, "Would you like a nurse?" And God made this arrangement, I can assure you. And she brought her mother to nurse the child. And I want to tell you, there was in the heart of that mother some dream. And it must have been powerfully demonstrated, because that boy grew up knowing who he was. In spite of all the wealth of Egypt, in spite of all the wonders of the land, in spite of all the power that he had achieved as the child of the princess, and all that he might have been, you can think about that. He might have had a pyramid erected to him somewhere down there in Giza. A tomb telling us that he had been a mighty one in Egypt. But you know what happens to those tombs? There are places where tourists go and look, but it's nothing but dead dust. But he chose to suffer affliction with the people of God rather than enjoy the pleasure of sin for a season in Egypt. And that was because a mother was dedicated to the task. I don't want to exclude the father. I want you to understand today that I believe the father has a primary role here. And I preach it, that he is to be the leader, and his task to lead and guide and nurture the children is primary. First in order. Not the mother. He is the guide. And that means responsibility. And responsibility here means to give of oneself. It means service, self-sacrifice, and so forth. But we're focusing on mothers now. And I believe the power of those early days. I don't know how long she had it. But she gave him truly to God. And what a difference that child made. What a difference that child made. And Lois and Eunice, New Testament, grandmother and mother. First chapter of 2 Timothy, third chapter of 2 Timothy. Paul, in speaking to Timothy in the first the second letter, and he's reminiscing now because his days are very short. He understands he is soon to be executed. And he reminisces with Timothy about his earlier days and his mother and grandmother and grandmother. And he says in verse 5, "Having been reminded of the unfeigned faith that is in you, which dwelt first in your grandmother Lois and in your mother Eunice, and I am persuaded in you also." Interesting story. Timothy's father was a Greek, an unbeliever. I don't know whether he's a pagan worshiper of idols. We're not told. He doesn't enter the picture. He's not a factor. And the city where they lived, Lystra, was a place where there was no Jewish synagogue. Just pagan temples. That's all there was. And yet, these women, I'm telling you, is this heroic? These women in that setting so aspired to train this little boy to be what God wanted him to be that they taught him and taught him and taught him, both by example and word, to such an extent that the pagan influence of the city of Lystra never touched him. I'm sure they did not have any idea that the day would come when a man named Saul of Tarsus would come to their city and talk to them about the Messiah having come. But they had prepared him for that hour. And Paul talks about that in 2 Timothy chapter 3, verse 14, "But abide in the things which you have learned and been assured of, knowing of whom you have learned them, and that from a baby or from a child you have known the sacred writings, which are able to make you wise unto salvation through faith that is in Christ Jesus." At his mother's knee, he learned through teaching and instruction. It is vital, it is critical in those early days. I don't know that we need to stress that above measure, but those early days are critical. It's not a time to be at the workplace. And if you are there, it ought to be because you have to do it in order to feed and clothe the family. Not for any kind of lifestyle. God help us. You will never regret it. You will never regret it. But the later years are important too. As we touch the lives of our children. But think what a difference Timothy made in the world. And I want to tell you, when you have this kind of selfless dream for your children, it'll keep you from doing some things that are bad. It'll keep you from trying to live your life through them. When you serve them and their needs. We've got an inclination as parents to want our children to be what we tried to be and failed to be. We want them to fulfill our dreams. And so we try to force them into some mold that they don't even belong in, don't fit in. Every child is unique. Special abilities, qualities. And it may be a special challenge for a mother to rear a child that's different than the mother. Different inclinations. A daughter especially, because mothers don't usually expect sons to grow up to be like them, but they expect the daughters to grow up to be like them. And there's the challenge. Challenge to take this daughter who may be different, different qualities, and nurture that daughter accordingly, rather than selfishly to try to use the child as an instrument of her own selfish ambition. We have to be careful of that. Remember, the child belongs to God. The child has his or her own unique qualities and abilities, and it's in that direction that we need to train them. And perhaps that's what Solomon had in mind in Proverbs 22:6 when he said, train up a child in the way that he should go. It may not be just as God has directed, but as that child has capacity, and when he's old, he will not depart from it. Anyway, if we love God deeply and love our children selflessly and guide them through life patiently and lovingly, one of these days, you'll look back and rejoice. And not only that, as the 31st chapter of Proverbs, it gives us a picture of the ideal woman says, your children will rise up and call you blessed. And your husband. And the truth is, you are. You are blessed because you have been a blessing. Because you have poured yourself out for the sake of your children. And given them as much as you are able, as best you are able, given them back to God. Well, it's good to be in assemblies like this. Good for me. Of course, everybody thinks I come here because that's where I get paid. And I do get an awful lot of generous help from the Christians here. They pay my grocery bill so that I can go out and preach. And I need to be doing a lot because they are sacrificing for that. And I need to be serious about that, but I won't tell you something. I need to be here. And I need to see you. And if you think only people who stand up and preach influence the lives of other people, you're mistaken. People who sit in pews in an earnest and godly way. When I think about many of you, it stirs my heart, try harder. I think about some of you mothers and what you're achieving. And it makes me want to be better. Well, that's the reason the Lord arranged this. So we could be together and talk about these great things. So that the mindless idiocy that's going on out there in this society will not carry us away when we have to face it every day. To be a mother is a very high calling indeed. And I want to tell you, when you do it, it'll be an intellectual challenge about all you can accept, and a spiritual challenge, absolutely, and a physical challenge. It'll draw the best of you out. But remember this, unlike some of the jobs we may do, none of it will go to waste. And it'll all last for eternity. I don't know how you're thinking about your relationship to God this morning. I don't know necessarily where each of you might be. But if you're not following the Lord God, if you do not love Him with all your heart, that's what it means. That means more than your own life. More than comfort. More than ease. More than your own ideas about that. More than your own judgment about that. Love Him absolutely. which is what Jesus is calling people to do when they say, when he says, come follow me. He's saying, come and do my Father's will as I have done my Father's will. And love him as I love him. Then you need to do that. You're not going to make it otherwise. You're not going to make it here very well, I'll tell you that right now. You can't throw the textbook that God has written out the window, the guide of human life, the very life he has made, and expect that life is going to be good, because it will not be good. And secondly, the transcendent effect, when this world is over, is more awful than you want to contemplate. And you don't need to do that, and God doesn't want it. We remembered something here today. That God demonstrated his love toward us, and that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. What do you think he did that for? You think that's a lukewarm, sort of tepid effect to reach you? He is serious. And my friend, you need to be serious too. He wants to be your father. Do you want to be his child? I hope so. And we're going to sing this hymn with the intention of encouraging you to take the step this morning to confess your faith in Jesus and be baptized into him for the forgiveness of your sins, from thenceforth to live a different kind of life in a new relationship with the Lord, new set of values, absolutely committed to. And if you're not a mother or father already, to become the kind of mother or father that you ought to be. And if you are, to be a better one. While we're standing and singing.